we're going to talk to Riley Bell, because this is the second annual Riley Really Needs People to Buy Tickets for His Show episode. And joining me is also Nick Manianis. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
He's sitting in the back corner there, so you just prod him with a stick. Riley.
Yeah.
What show do you need people to buy tickets for?
It's called Josh and Riley Angry Fishermen, but I really didn't like the title, so I've just been calling it Josh and Riley, and then we got our poster artist to just say Josh and Riley. He's like, isn't it called Angry Fishermen? Just don't worry about that.
Why didn't you like Angry Fishermen?
Oh, it was a thing, like, we were going to do, like, all the shows we do have, a subtitle of what we are. Like, first year it was Bicycle Thieves. We're going to do Ancient Druids at the front, and Angry Fishermen was this one, because that was the name of our trial show last year. And I just don't like it. I think Josh and Riley's a bit snappier. And then it gets more to the point. Look at us!
Which is what it's about, really.
Yeah.
What about Riley and Josh? Wouldn't that work better?
Nah. We had this discussion.
Did you lead it, or did Josh?
No. Because we just said Josh and Riley. He was like, what do you reckon about Riley and Josh? He's like, I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Now, Nick and I went to see last year, and it's always pleasant to go and see people you know perform where you don't have to nervously laugh. So
yeah,
that was a bonus.
Yeah.
wouldn't you agree, Nick?
I laughed a lot. I had that sore stomach, muscle, chest, ribcage thing
going. That's so good. Yeah. That's the best one.
Yeah, but it was a relief. Like,
relief.
At least I could say I actually laughed.
It's true, yeah. So we didn't have to go, oh, yeah, Riley was really good.
I didn't think you wouldn't be funny.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Now, was it, I have to look, peek behind, ask behind the curtain here. Yeah. Was that really you coming out on stage?
Yeah, that was straight up me coming out to my family. Because you said to me many years ago, and it stuck with me, that you don't have to come out to them unless you have to.
Yeah.
And they won't care. I was like, oh, yeah. And that was just the moment I had to, because I had jokes about it.
Yeah. That's a long time ago.
Oh, ages.
Yeah.
At what point in the conversation, was this when you were at school?
Yeah.
So at what point, sorry, before I go further, Nick and I taught Riley at high school, so
it's going to be hell?
So when did you have this discussion about coming out sexuality-wise?
I don't know if that's podcast material.
Oh, well,
yeah, no,
But it's along the lines of, you know, when, like, students disclose really personal stuff to you, sometimes it's so personal you need to say, I don't need to tell anyone that. Like, there are some things that kids and other teachers need to tell other people, and that's one of the things that I say to kids when they say that to me. I'm not going to tell anyone, you don't need to tell anyone. Like, it's not...
Okay, so what was your point? You don't need to tell them unless you have to.
Yeah.
There's
no pressing need.
Yeah, there's no pressing need to, unless you feel you have to, and then that's when it comes
forward. I never, ever did.
Until you're on stage.
Until I was on stage, it's like, none of this is going to make any sense if they don't know.
You're like, mum, dad, at the back.
Yeah, just sidebar, and let's accept it right now, and let's move on.
Wow, you know, part of me spent, there's no way this can be happening now. Like, seriously.
You mean like in this age?
In the performance. No, in the performance. I was like, no, that's got to be part of the performance.
Yeah.
Like, really only you saying now, no, that actually happened there and then. That's quite
awesome. Yeah,
that's weird. I assumed that was true.
Right.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess because it was true.
It was a bit easier because I'd done it a couple more other times family members who I was a bit closer to, and they were like, oh, I'm going to come see your comedy tonight.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh, you're in for a treat." So I had a bit of practice with that.
Even in a weirder clash with the fact that my daughter's kindergarten teacher was your auntie.
Catherine.
Yeah. Which was even stranger, and she was there.
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, why are you here?" Oh, because Riley's my nephew, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is
getting
weird."
Yeah, just came out to her as well. Yeah.
And then that, and I was like, "Cool." So, what did they say? Anything?
No. They avoided it for a while. Except my mother said a couple of days later, so just, can't you just tell us instead of saying in front of 100 people?
That's so
God.
Cool. Yeah, you took
and
away
just
their
like,
moment.
Give us a bit of, give us a bit of drama or something, a bit of preparation.
Yeah.
Your dad's still wearing a shock blanket.
That's pretty awesome.
But, you can't do something that's important to you on someone else's terms.
Yeah, oh, totally, terms, yeah, yeah.
Right, and for you, it's like in front of an audience that made it an awesome show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then to be able to refer to it as well as an awesome show. So what are you going to announce? What are you going to announce this year?
Nothing, unfortunately. But I like this show way better because, like, the night before we did the show you saw, I was like, this is shit. This is so shit. And I still feel kind of like, oh, I could have done so many things better. But I'm very excited for this show.
All right.
It's because we wrote this entire, like, all the bits we'd written in the past 2 years that we could work on stage went in, and we got about 2-3 months out. We were like, oh, this is going to take a lot of money and effort. Let's just do these bits in 40 minutes of stand-up, which is so much easier and also way funnier. Like, we just, like we just went, 3/4 of this is absolute horse shit. Like, there was one about, there was a Nivea commercial about this woman who was talking about, God, no, I can't say
it. If you're going,
it's so just, there's a lot of, there's, Josh writes really profane sketches and then goes, all right, now can you give it, like, structure and character and anything, because these are really funny jokes. Look at that, beating up gash, that's a funny word.
It sure is. So if we go along, what date was it? That
18th and 19th.
Of March, and where is it?
It's at the ANU Drama Lab at 9 o'clock, part of the Canberra Comedy Festival.
Canberra Comedy Festival.
Yeah, two nights.
Yeah, two nights at 100-seater, but the Drama Lab's one of the worst venues in the... I mean, oh, it's great.
It's great. I love it. The acoustics
are wonderful. Just, it's bleacher seats, which is terrible for comedy. Yeah. Unless you're like a big act, you use a stage a lot, and everyone knows you're funny.
Yeah.
It's no good, but...
So if we go along and chant out, do the Nivea cream bit, would that
help you out? Josh will be ecstatic because I told him we couldn't do it.
We're like, yes, I told you.
It's just this woman explaining, like, this, because this woman comes in, she's very beautiful, and then her co-worker's like, oh, wow, you look great. I was like, oh, yeah, just put something on. He's like, oh, you could... No, you got your gash pounded last night, didn't you? And just, like... 3 minutes of that, just her extrapolating on this insane sexual scenario. And then
you'll look up and then your audience says, there's the reporter there.
Jowls wobbling.
No, curious, that's not comedy.
No, it certainly isn't.
You'd have thought they would have edited that out.
They're opening with this? This is strange. All right, well, we'll move on to you, Riley's chosen 6 songs. Yeah. And I think I mentioned this in the last podcast that we did last year, was that even maybe the first time I met you when you were in year 9 maths, you had your headphones in, and I was like, take your headphones out.
Yeah.
And you took them out, and as I always do, I go, what were you listening to? And you were listening to Fleetwood Mac.
Really?
Yeah, but not
Rumours.
Yeah, Rumours. Sadly, it wasn't Tusk.
First record I ever owned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, what year 9 boy listens to Fleetwood Mac's Rumours? Yeah. Good choice, but all right, cool.
Yeah.
So was this difficult? Was it a difficult list, or is it?
It was so hard. Well, I knew the first 2 songs that I gave you, I knew straight out of the bat. It was like, oh, no, I have to talk about them. And then the rest, just every day, just like, what the fuck do I pick?
Yeah.
And so they're all just impulse. Because I was going to go, it's going to 2... heavy metal, hard rock songs, 2 rap songs, 2 folky, more upbeat or acoustic songs, and at least 1 song that would impress you.
One song to me. That song would impress me.
I don't know. It's like, oh, he's a cool guy. Just that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's always that back part of your mind that when you're talking about music with someone, you're like, if I say this, it'll really impress them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've got an hour to also impress me, so we'll see what you got. Yeah, you're one of the few people who gave me a list and then didn't change it as well. That's usually what happens. People go, here you go. Oh, I'll get rid of that, or no, oh, that was stupid. Or I go to start me and they go, oh, I don't want to do that one. Why did I choose this one? This is stupid. Anyway.
I said to you first that I wanted to pick songs that were like a centerpiece of a whole album, because I think it's weird talking about songs. It's just like, listen to this bit.
Yeah.
Oh, that bit's great.
Oh, you talked over it. Oh, wait again.
Yeah. But that was quickly abandoned because I just wanted to pick songs that we could talk about.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the songs I really like are just like, oh man, this song's great.
Yeah.
I love it. Good guitar. Yeah, good.
Like it.
Yeah.
Moving on. All right, the first one you chose was Lateralis.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely wrong. By Tool.
Yeah, yeah.
2001.
Yeah.
Nick? Fan of Tool?
Nope.
Oh. Really?
Yep.
Okay. I haven't listened to this album for a long time, but like Anima was on... Anima? Yes, it was on...
Anima? Pyro.
Anima? A-E? I never knew how to pronounce it. Yeah. I'm guessing it's Anima.
I hear Anima.
Yeah. That was on high rotation when I was at uni in the house I lived in. But yeah, this one I was like, cool, I haven't listened to this for like since 2001.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was cool to listen to. Why this song, Riley? It's a little bleak.
Is it?
No, it's not bleak.
It's not bleak. No,
well.
It's at its core, the lyrical content, it's about... experiencing things viscerally, with high emotion, so as not to blur your humanity from cold analytical thought process.
Well, I don't know if it's insanity. It reminded me a lot of Munich.
Yeah, see, I was listening to it with the lyrics on the second monitor today, going, that's really interesting subject material.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that I'd listen to if I liked the musical bits.
Yeah.
But
that's what I thought. That's most exactly what I was thinking.
And most of their songs are like that. But also this song, I don't know if you've read this, Nick, but... it's all based around the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah,
verses are a Fibonacci sequence of words.
So it's like the phrases where the pauses were. It was like one syllable, then one syllable, then two syllables, and then three, and then five, and then eight. But then and it goes up to the next one, then goes back down again or something.
It goes back down, signatures
change throughout as well.
Because of Fibonacci, and then what's the golden ratio one?
Yeah, so that's when I started going, hang on, and the golden ratio as well. I instantly thought, I was being all, oh, look at all the things they're trying to pack into it. And then, hang on, I listen to the Boards of Canada, and they make a bad job to do all that stuff.
Oh, and, really?
Lots of their albums have themes and that kind of stuff where there's numerical, mathematical themes and stuff.
I just like listening to them.
Yeah.
Well,
my bicycle.
That's what's,
I didn't realize all that was happening.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's weird about this song is that it's like... it's got all this weird stuff in it and all these references and, weird time signatures, and the song itself is saying, man, don't worry about all that shit. Just fucking listen to the song.
Yeah, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And let go. Yeah.
It's my favorite. And because of all the stuff they package in their music, there's all sorts of weird, crazy fans out there that dissect their entire albums. Like, there was one that the album should actually be, if you listen to the lyrics and the time signatures, you're actually supposed to listen to it in a spiral.
Oh,
you're supposed to listen to Lateralis first, and then the one above Lateralis, and the one below Lateralis,
right,
and then you've got to listen to it, drawing a spiral on the album, and which is batshit insane. But then someone did that same thing to us to their latest album, 10,000 Days, because someone noticed that three of the songs on the album... there was Vigenti Tray, which is just 4 minutes of weird electronic sounds, which isn't unusual for a Tool album.
Yeah.
And then there's... but then there's... it's 10,000 Days Part 1.
Yeah.
And then 10,000 Days Part 2, Wings for Mary. Someone noticed that the length of Vigenti Tray and Wings for Mary Part 1 combined is the same length of Wings for Mary... Part, is it 10,000 Days Part 2? And so they thought, well, obviously they're supposed to be played at the same time.
Of course.
And then they sync up completely. If you play it, and then when someone found it out and posted it on the internet, it was just like in 2012 or something, 2013, the album came out, I think, 2010. Until when someone found it, when they found out, they were like, yeah, I'm surprised it took this long for someone to figure it out. Like, oh, really? Did you?
So isn't that the opposite of what this song means?
Yeah. Though?
Because it's about that overthinking. Yeah. Like what happens to you when you overthink?
Yeah.
Oh man, that chorus does a bit of a wake up call. I'm interested though.
This made me depressed. This is why I found it dark, was because it made me depressed, because it reminded me of every concert that I've ever been to.
Yeah.
Maybe with the exception of that Radiohead concert, where for no more than like 2 minutes do I get out of my own head. Like, at some point, I'll be like, what's everyone else doing? And be horribly self-conscious. It's weird. Like, at live shows, more than anything else.
Really?
Yeah.
When I saw Tool live the first time. It was the first metal band I... Oh, actually, no. Rammstein played right before them. They're less a metal band and more a crazy theatre show.
Yeah.
And that, like... you can't be out in your own head, Rammstein, because you're like, what the fuck are they going to do now? But yeah, that was the first concert I went to where I was like just in it completely. But then I went and saw him again in Sydney, and we were up in the nosebleeds next to like a 10-year-old boy and his mum on her phone.
So I don't want to give away what's in the rest of the list, but one of the songs that you picked later on, did you pick it because there's a thematic link to this track?
No.
All right.
I'll
bring that up later. So I'm just going to say...
bring it up later because probably...
The transcendentalist stuff in this, though.
Yeah.
Right? So...
In the song?
Like, reading today about tools, like, oh, okay, they're a bit more interesting than I thought they were. But particularly the final, like chorus... verse of this track seems to suggest... kind of transcendentalist perspective stuff.
Yeah, they
that was kind of interesting. Even though it was like, but at that point I was like, does this song really go for 9 minutes? Am I really listening to this?
Well, they
have to go to Matt's tonight now because I've just done
nine minutes.
Well, there's the final album on Enema, Third Eye, is all about that sort of stuff. The like hook, which only appears twice, it's just them screaming, prying open my third eye. And then they've got another song called 46 and 2, which is based on old mate Carl Jung's idea of 46 whatevers. And then they're like, then there's two more because we're more than human and all this sort of crazy shit. And it's a recurring theme in like what's called progressive metal, which is just metal that's not weird. Metal that's weird.
That is weird,
Throughout, like Mastodon, who's on the list later, they did a whole album called Crack the Sky, which is like 18-minute songs about this boy who has an out of body experience and meets God, who is actually Rasputin, cosmic Rasputin, and he teaches him the ways of the universe, and then he battles sky monsters and all sorts of weird shit.
I was hoping that getting us three together, we wouldn't get very esoteric. But I guess we... let's move on. Let's move on from that. And the next song you chose was Swimming Pools by Kendrick Lamar. Sorry. Parentheses. Drake. Yes.
The first time I heard this song, he was performing it live on SNL.
Yeah.
And so it had just come out. And I was like, I skipped it. Because I was like, it's just gangster rap, blah, 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 blah. And then... what usually happens with rap music is all of my friends start listening to this awesome album, and then they go, have you listened to this yet? I was like, no, I'll give it a go. And then I get as hooked as them, and we're all just talking about it constantly. This is one of my favorite albums of the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Good Kid, M-A-A-D City.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar. He seems really pretentious because he's always like, I'm not a rapper, I'm a storyteller. He's straight edge, very religious, all this sort of stuff. And that's what I really liked about the song at first glance. It's probably the only West Coast gangster rap song, high profile gangster rap song that is anti-drinking and that sort of thing. And there's recurring themes in the album about drinking and doing drugs. Not only is like inhibits your value as a human being, but also contributes to horrific gang violence in South Central Los Angeles.
Yeah, but I think this song, it's a great song.
Yeah.
But I think it falls into one of those categories of a song where the message is totally lost.
Yes.
Like, people would put it on and be like, woo!
Oh, totally. My friend Fiona, who also is a former student of yours, she was telling a story about how her sister's girlfriend wanted to get drunk and listen to this song while driving through main streets of Melbourne. I was like, it's the opposite of what this song's about.
Headshot.
Frank, Frank.
Sit down.
Frank, Frank.
Stand up.
Frank, Frank.
Pass out.
Frank, Frank.
Wake up.
Frank, Frank.
Fade it.
Frank, Frank.
Fade it.
Now I done grew around some people living their life in bottles. Granddaddy had the golden flask, backstroke every day in Chicago. Some people like the way it feels, some people wanna kill their sorrow, some people wanna fit in with the popular. That was my problem. I was in a dark room, loud tunes, looking to make a vow soon that I'ma get fucked up, filling up my cup. I see the crowd mood changing by the minute, and the record on repeat. Took a sip, then another sip, then somebody said to me, nigga, why you babysitting? Only two or three shots. I'ma show you how to turn it up a notch. First you get a swimming pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. Pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. I wave a few bottles, then I watch them all fly. All the girls wanna play, they watch. I got a swimming pool full of liquor, and they dive in it. Pool full of liquor, I'ma dive in it.
But then, like, and also, like, that's what the hook is. And then the end is very dark.
Yeah, it is.
Horrible, and associating this with like straight up associating with gang violence and all sorts of horrific shit. And I think, is this the song that ends with the skit with the old woman telling them that they're dying of thirst?
Maybe in the album version.
Yeah, maybe. So
I read somewhere that the album version has a skit or something.
So the album's like, it's a concept album about this fictionalized version of Kendrick Lamar. Growing up, so the first couple of songs are just like weird intro bits, very general, and then the third song is called Backseat Freestyle, which he said it was just, I just wanted to kind of encapsulate what it is like being a 16-year-old African-American youth in LA, and it's like all full of this like really vulgar imagery, and the hook is, I hope my dick get big as the Eiffel Tower so I can fuck the world for 72, like all this horrible, really funny, awesome stuff, and then it slowly gets worse and worse, punctuated by these skits. So the first couple of songs are all very bravado, swag rap sort of thing, are punctuated by his mother calling him, asking where he is, and his dad drunk, asking for his dominoes, and then the end of Swimming Pools, it ends with these men, they're picking up Kendrick Lamar and from the club, and they're like, oh yeah, we should probably get out of here. And then they drive past these guys who beat up Kendrick Lamar because of a woman, and then they fire warning shots and they shoot back. And then it turns into this thing where there's this woman talking over them, talking about how they're going to kill somebody, saying, oh, and then saying that you boys are dying of thirst. You're dying of thirst for water, holy water. And then she reads the sinner's prayer, and they read it back. And there's heaps of religious imagery from then on in the album. And I read that today. The old woman in it is Maya Angelou.
Yeah. Actually, I have heard that.
I just find. And this is probably the only song that I think I wanted to talk more about the album than the song, because the album as a piece works infinitely better than any song on it individually.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the last episode when I talked to Nick Issa, we talked a lot about that drinking culture. With that, is what the song is based on. The whole, he came from it. Came at it from like a footy background, like, we don't trust you because you don't drink with us, and now you do drink, and now we trust you. You're a real man now, and like, here, I'll show you how to drink and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That kind of rubbish bravado, which I guess we spend a lot of our time trying to prevent in school.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
But it depends. And it depends on the group as well. Like, from year to year, don't you find that from year to year, you'll have a group who'll be like, won't have any bravado in it, and then another group that's just dominated by it.
Yeah,
it's really strange.
So it shifts from...
Yeah, it's a year to year thing.
It might be like just phases. Like, all of these kids go through one phase of like, this is what we do. This is what we do to feel good about ourselves because we're really confused, but not anymore.
Yeah.
And then they... I guess after a while. I think it happened to us for a while.
I was going to ask, like, what was your, like, drinking?
It was all centered around my friend Tim, because his house was where we drank. So and his parents. And we actually, his parents are really good about it. We kind of eased into it, because the first couple of times I drank was at year 10 after formal party, which was a bit of a nightmare. Cause police were there. I ended up... trying to break into my friend Bill's bedroom, but it turned out to be their parents' bedroom. Just horrific, horrific shit.
People can't see me holding my hands
over your face.
I don't know. It feels...
Because it was on his watch. It was on your watch.
You're right. Waiting for the principal to come in? Where were you?
And then second time, we were just walking around Dunlop drinking cans of UDL.
Yeah.
But then we started going to Tim's house, and Tim's parents were like, all right, we bought you this two six packs for the six of you, and you're going to stay in the house, right? And it was just kind of nothing really bad happened after that until we got to like 18, 19. We realized we'll have to do this forever now.
That's a good way to put it, actually.
See, I didn't get drunk until I was 18.
Yeah.
That's what my mum always says to me.
That's true, me neither. I didn't really get drunk. I didn't really get really drunk until I was nearly 19.
And, I don't know, then we had a few years through uni.
Well, I just recently had a month without drinking. It's the first month without drinking I've had since 18, I guess, since I started drinking. Just because I've always said in my head, I should try and have a month without drinking. Like, 100 times I've said that.
Yeah.
So then I was like,
was it easy? Was it super easy?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I think it's easy when you hang around older people and you go, I'm not, and you go to a pub and they go, do you want anything? You go, yeah, give me a lemonade. And they go, okay. But I mean, that's all on you.
Yeah, that's
true. And
they
go, all right, cool. You're not drinking that.
I think it helps. It's the same with the people I hang out with, but not because they're older and more understanding, just because everyone's lazy.
Yeah.
So if you're like, I'm driving, you're like, oh man, I wish I was driving. Then I wouldn't have to do all this shit tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good idea, man. In fact, no, I'm not drinking either. I'm driving.
Yeah. I think maybe a lot of that's on you though. Like, I don't think it's as big a deal as what I'd made in my head to be like, no, I'm not drinking.
Yeah.
You just go, I'm not drinking. You know, like, I played in sporting teams in Canberra where people just like, oh, I'm not drinking because I want to get fit. And everyone's like, cool. Mm. That's smart. I should do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's all on me, but that was a bit weird. Multicultural festival was hard to go to, but it was fine.
Yeah.
Good beans. Thanks, Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, thanks, Kendrick Lamar. Yeah, that's right. I also found it was a lot easier because I realised that I have really interesting friends drunk or sober. Like, I was like, oh.
Yeah. But that's why it's sometimes I don't like people like, you're not drinking? Oh no, because some people are only interesting when they're drunk. And I think my pet hate
My pet hate would be people who are only interesting when they're drunk.
No, my pet hate is just uninteresting people.
Yeah.
I really, if you have nothing to say,
yeah,
apart from like hot, eh? But at least it's a dry heat.
Yes.
It oh is dry... fucking, it's like you can go on into the shade. It's like, I don't care.
Mm. What do you do?
So I've started doing it just because I'm on Tinder, and because everyone on Tinder is uninteresting.
Yeah.
I just do stuff like, I'll open with just some dumb, weird thing like, I'm trapped in a bicycle shop, help me.
Yeah.
Or I asked this one girl who was like, no, it was a guy. He was 21 and he said, he had his description, city boy, but country heart. It's like, oh, God, you're the most uninteresting person in the world.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. So I asked him that, do you actually believe that anyone could ever be romantically involved, given that all of our experience is subjective and that you never really understand a person?
Mm.
And he was like, well, what? I was like, ah! That's about what I expected. So, yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to number three.
Yep.
Tread Lightly. Great title. Left it on.
I initially picked this song just because it's one of those songs that I was just like, yeah, I fucking love this song.
Yeah.
Because I've been listening to a lot of Mastodon because I'm seeing them at the end of the month.
Yeah.
They're so good. They're one of my favorite bands. I can't articulate why I like. I can. Their drummer, whose name escapes me, is one of the best living, working at the moment.
Yeah.
He's very, very good. But also, like, because I like heavy metal, but there's a lot of contemporary metal, not like 90s, 80s thrash metal. That was heavy, but the stuff that's coming out now is like heavy to the point of self-parody. Like,
yeah,
and not just that. So the stuff that gets mainstream, like relative mainstream for that genre, is all these hardcore bands like Parkway Drive and who else is big?
You're looking at the wrong people.
There's just like they've got a very it's a very niche genre.
So when did you first start listening to Mastodon?
Mastodon, it would have been this brings up a really good point, because I listened to them the first time I listened to Tool, first time I listened to Queens of the Stone Age. Most of the bands that I now love came from Guitar Hero 3.
Really?
Why? Because I started playing Guitar Hero before that. I kind of hit that stage when I was a teenager where I started forming all this these new musical tastes and like the paradigm of my musical taste, and so that most of that came from was like a Guitar Hero 3 was like a catalyst.
Yeah, Guitar Hero 3 was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Really
what
awesome.
What year were you with that, you reckon?
Oh, it must have been year 8.
Yeah,
oh,
so
okay.
That was around then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it for Christmas and I was so happy, and I played it for 16 hours straight one day.
I played that game a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. And find that the tracks that I played a lot in that I like listening to now.
Mm.
But I wouldn't like the rest of the band stuff. But that Guitar Hero 3 is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
and so Blood and Thunder was on. No, that was on Guitar Hero Metallica. But it was still a Guitar Hero game. Blood and Thunder was the first song I listened to. And then I listened to the album was off Leviathan.
Yeah.
And I was listening to it and I was like, this is about Moby Dick. Because the story is, after their first album, Remission, they did a tour and they went back home to Georgia, where they're from. And their guitarist, it was like the last, he left separately to everyone else. And they're in the studio. It's like, I'll meet us in the studio. We've made up. And he comes into the studio and he's read Moby Dick on the flight, like not the flight home, but like during the tour. And he holds it up to them and goes, we have to make an album out of this. This is like the best thing ever.
And Transcendentalist.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wouldn't know. I haven't read movies.
So this is a Transcendentalist?
No, it's not.
Oh.
It's not. You just brought that up, and I remembered reading some of that stuff and going, oh, there's a third. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, that just made me think, I wonder if Riley's read Moby Dick.
No,
because,
I've got a copy in there, and it's got a marker on page 50, I reckon. It was great, but really dense.
Yeah, apparently, someone once told me, someone who's studying English at the moment said, It's like he had this really good book and felt the need to make two-thirds of it an essay about the whaling industry.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would never have finished it had I not studied at uni, I don't think.
Yeah? Yeah.
But the lecturer of the course where we read it was amazing. And I found that I could just lock myself in the library at ANU and read it. And get lost in the whaling stuff. And I don't want to ever read it again because my memory of reading it is so wonderful.
Yeah.
So including the whaling bits. That's
apparently that's what you get lost in them.
And is that part of it?
Yeah, I think I read a thing where Melville was like, yeah, you need to kind of inhabit this character of Ahab, and you need to get lost and completely obsessed with all this whaling shit.
And the ocean. How vast it is.
Yeah.
And you can lose yourself. Yeah.
And that's, I think their thing was like, it's all about like there's these, this, surface element of revenge and bloody heroism and rah, rah, rah. And then there's this undercurrent of like loss and fear and all this sort of stuff. It's like, that's the most metal thing of all time. Trying to be really tough, but you're actually really scared.
Just losing yourself in your obsession.
Yeah. And a lot of metal bands are fucking obsessed.
So the last two lines of the song are quite uplifting as well, aren't
they?
Tread
lightly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's the lyric.
It's positive.
What are the last two lines?
I can't remember. I was just reading this afternoon. I wish I could. I can't remember. This stuff was relying on
you. Book. I didn't write.
It's your podcast.
Yeah,
I'm the guest.
It's something
I'm
about
bringing up.
Whoops. It's all about. It's like wake up the earth and return to light and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Fighting the forces of darkness and stuff.
Well, isn't it just, you know, it's a lot about the angel and the
and
the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other.
Yeah. And
working out which one, where you're going.
And this is one of the songs, like coming back to Lateralis, it's one of these songs that I just enjoy very viscerally. And a lot of Mastodon is like that. It's just very heavy and fast and mixing. And they say they really try to mix like profound with profane. Like, because the heavy metal scene is a very profane, low form of music. And a lot of heavy metal artists and singers, they choose it because it's that, and they can explore profound ideas within it. They think it's the best way to do that.
Yeah.
Even some of the stuff that's fucking terrible, this is very intricate and very complex from a musical standpoint.
See, I can find myself listening, like when students are really into metal, I can understand the musical complexity and how there's no way I could ever do that ever, and that it's amazing, and to watch YouTube videos and see some of, you know, the ability to play guitar and the drummers and that kind of stuff are pretty amazing. I just don't like metal, and it's quite interesting because having a couple of metal songs on your list and making myself listen to them and read the lyrics, like, ah, okay,
yeah,
like, oh, that's why people like Tool so much compared to some of these other bands. Like today, I realized that.
But then,
it's cool. That was a good change to my outlook to music today.
Yeah, and so Mastodon is really interesting because a lot of when you talk about heavy metal, you talk about the culture of it because it's very heavily ingrained in a culture. And a lot of people I talk to who are big heavy metal fans, and the kind of heavy metal fan that don't really listen to anything else, they don't like Tool. They're like a barely metal. Who cares? They're just, but they love Mastodon.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
They love them nearly across the board. I think Mastodon's one of the biggest, in terms of the metal community, one of the biggest bands, most well loved bands.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. Like, I was talking to this guy, Tim Drury, who's a big metal fan from way back, and. He's the one who said Tool aren't even metal. They're just progressive rock. They're just Rush. and I got very personally offended for a second. because he loves all the very like late 80s, British new wave late 80s metal, and all that sort of stuff. But someone described that sort of person as they love metal so much, they hate most of it.
Yeah.
And that's sort of...
The way you're talking reminds me a lot of people that I grew up with who were big on punk. And that's what they were like. Yeah, they love punk so much that they...
hate it.
It's all exclusionary. Like, no, that's not punk. No, that's not... No, you can't like that if you like this, and you can't like that, and all that stuff. But, yeah, it sort of ends up eating itself.
Yeah. I think why a heavy metal subculture stuck around so long is because it's always been pretty fringe, apart from hair metal. That there's always been, if you see another guy with a long hair and a denim jacket with lots of pins, and he goes, I hate Tool, but what about Mastodon? Oh, I fucking love Mastodon, they're awesome. What about who's another really big one at the moment? There's been a rise of Mars Volta. Metal fans are really getting into Mars Volta recently.
Metal fans are getting into Mars Volta.
They'll go, yeah, man. Actually, this guy, Tim Drury, he loved Neutral Milk Hotel. Absolutely adored Neutral Milk Hotel. Loves them to pieces. One of their biggest fans. And he made me listen to them, and they're great. Neutral Milk Hotel.
Did they tour last year?
I have no idea.
That's that weird indie band.
Yeah.
Indie following type thing. And one of my students went to see them last year, I think.
Yeah, I think they were the early 90s rock.
And then they reformed and did it.
And I also completely understand why people don't like metal.
Oh, but it's any genre. I understand. Yeah, it's the teaching, it's really important to not exclude genres of music. Sometimes it's the only way to get to know a kid.
Yeah.
And so you have to find something.
Does that come with age, though, the not caring about that? Because I'm sure when I was younger, I used to be like, oh, I can't tell people to listen to this, because if they, like you said, if they don't like it, then I'm going to take that as a personal affront.
Well, yeah, I only started kind of getting rid of that when I was like 18, 19, where I realized it doesn't really matter, does it?
The big difference was whether you start listening to people and going, oh, yeah, I can see that. Wow, it doesn't change the way I think about them. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than people going, oh, shit, they, like, you give your feedback and you're like, I can see why I wouldn't like that.
Yeah. So I have pretty eclectic music tastes and still do, I think, generally. So there wasn't, I never had conversations where I'd...
Because they were like, I like this band. They were like, who's that? They were never like, I don't like
it. People asked me what I liked, and I really never had a problem saying it. It would be different all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. So.
Yeah. And then they could listen to it and go, huh.
Yeah.
I think it's because for young people, when I started listening to metal, the first metal song I listened to was Rammstein's Rammstein, which is very heavy, very slow. And I listened to it, I was like, people can just do this? This is amazing. This is exactly how I feel right now. this is...
How did they know that?
Yeah. And then it just opened up this. I was like, all these guys, it's just saying... Well, mostly white men, but...
Yeah.
Like, they're saying...
So that's the same response that I had to the heavier stuff that I enjoyed, which was, you know, Nirvana when they came out, and Nine Inch Nails, Downward Spiral, and those people, Faith No More. You know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, I know it's musically very dissimilar, but...
Yeah.
But yeah. No, but no, at that same time, I took up that sort of... Nirvana and Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff. And I couldn't understand why any of my friends... Like, no one I know likes that same sort of genre, except for maybe one or two people. And so I think why people, kids are like, but it's so good, and that's why they get exclusionary about it, because it's so personal and it's so close to them, because it means so much that they can't separate. They can't. Oh, no, I've lost it. Never mind. I lost my train of thought. I probably need to sit down and think about that for a little bit, and we can
piece that together.
Yeah, I can piece that together later.
All right. Well, we're up to. God, we've been going for a long time. We're only halfway there. Number four, which is Keep Yourself Warm.
Yeah.
By Frightened Rabbit.
This is probably the only song on here that I've started listening to relatively recently.
Was this the cool song that you hoped I
liked? Yeah. I was like, man, I like this.
Yeah, it's fun.
Fried and Rabbit are this, it's like a four-piece band out of Scotland. I discovered them a year ago listening to You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes, and he always talked about how he only listened to three bands, Kings of Leon, The National, and Fried and Rabbit. And he had the lead singer of Fried and Rabbit on. I was like, oh, he's a really cool dude. He's, I wonder what they're talking about. And then I listened to, I just went on Spotify, I just picked the first top song, which was this one. And it was really good, but it also was really nostalgic.
Yes.
Because...
100% right there.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we're nostalgic about the same thing.
No.
But, yeah. But it was because when I was... And this is before I listened to Guitar Hero. play Guitar Hero. I listened to a lot of Coldplay, a lot of Shins, a lot of very overwrought emotional music.
Yeah.
And stuff like Coldplay. Like, I look back at that now, I was like, I get it, but a lot of Coldplay stuff is kind of like paint by numbers emotional
stuff. Big chorus.
Science is still a great song.
Yeah, a lot of great songs.
Yeah.
And it was, and all this sort of stuff, and all my friends loved it. And so. But we kind of, I started listening to metal and I was like, that's what I need. And then, and then I started listening to, and it started branching out and, just becoming more discerning with my taste in music. And then when I listened to this, I was like, oh, this is still really well crafted and the lyrics are really good, but it is a throwback to that. Just bare bones sentimentality. And just a really, really good breakup songs.
Yeah.
That whole album, The Midnight Organ Fight, which is the best euphemism ever. It's just like just chock-a-block full of perfect breakup songs.
Yeah.
And then their latest album, Pedestrian Verse, is also it's full of that sort of stuff as well.
I really instantly liked how this one sounded.
Yeah.
And then I didn't like it so much when I read the lyrics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it was just the. Am I reading it too shallowly that like, sex isn't enough to find love with someone? I don't know.
I think it was more about. I think it's a like a. Just I think the lead singer talked about how it was about he wrote the album after he broke up with his girlfriend. And so then he just tried to fuck anything that moved.
Yeah.
And he just felt worse and worse because.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah.
So that's what the nostalgia was. I agree. Yeah. That's what the nostalgia was for me. Okay. Was like, oh, so maybe I should have listened to this song at like 21 or 22 or something. That would have been more helpful.
I
don't think I would have worked. I don't think I knew that even at that age.
I just listened to the song and went, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's. I don't know, but it made me want to listen to more.
Yeah, so that's definitely.
That's the interesting. This is probably the least. This is like mid-range on that album.
Yeah,
and like one of my kind of just mid-range in their catalog. I think Poke off the same album. Did you guys listen to that?
Yeah.
It's mainly acoustic. Very, very good. Really good lyrics. Really nice.
Get my home, and I'll find out more. It's a choo-choo train, a rocket launch. If we have a hormone race, I'm bound to finish first. A house beat, you'll find your love in a hole. You won't find love in a, won't find love in a hole.
It's almost throwback to Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah, in some ways.
That's the kind of, like, the lyrics and the even the sound on some of the songs. And I was like, hmm. When I looked up and found they were Scottish, I was like, huh.
Yeah, I never liked Belle and Sebastian. And, in fact, I it's only in the last year and a half that I've started listening to stuff that was kind that's kind of more gentle or folksy.
Yeah,
or, I mean, that's folksy isn't even the way to describe it. But if that's
twee,
me.
Would that be a good word?
No.
I heard them described as twee.
Belle and Sebastian is such a varied band. They've got all sorts of shit going on in their different albums.
Belle and Sebastian, have you seen their fans?
Yeah.
What are they like?
I work with
exactly.
A couple.
Exactly.
A couple.
No, I'm just, you know, I'm playing that stereotype. I'm
listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might come and find you and punch you in the back of the head.
They're going to bash me.
Actually, I have.
They wouldn't, though. They would talk to you.
Exactly.
Maybe they'll throw a cup of warm tea over.
How dare you? Know they go to and they're like, oh, I don't want to waste
you can
it.
Probably
can you go
to one of their concerts and everybody just keeps the distance from each other so that nobody bumps into each other?
Well,
they'd
all maybe hug. Like, oh, keep, you know. Nice.
So just
yeah,
hands above the shoulders, everybody.
Terribly judgmental.
Hands above the shoulders. Should be a Belle Sebastian album.
It just sounds like one.
Anyway, sorry, back to... Yeah. Back to where we were.
Let's keep shitting on Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah.
No, let's not, because I can't be mean to fans of a band that I haven't really listened to.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, that's the good thing about this list of songs so far. It's like songs I wouldn't have listened to that I did. So they were...
So you said you were nostalgic.
Yeah.
That era of music.
It wasn't so much an era, just that kind of type of music, just very overly emotional 14, 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Like Brick by Ben Folds 5, that sort of thing. Just like, oh my God. Just that sort of thing. And just listening.
I hated that song when it first came out. And now I really like it.
God, he
really?
Can't make his fucking mind up about songs.
I don't know.
Now you're that guy. Wow, really?
That sort of stuff. And I was like, oh, it's good to just be able to like songs like this without feeling like I'm being too juvenile or puerile.
Yeah, that's something to be said for any music, I guess.
Yeah.
I think a lot of...
There's nothing juvenile about Mastodon.
No,
very complex,
no, of course.
Talented musicians.
That's true.
How very dare you.
How dare you, indeed. Well, now you've made me lose my train of thought. So
sorry.
That's all right. No, all right. Well, song number five.
Yeah.
Which is The Yes and The Your.
Yeah.
By Aesop Rock.
So I was more just picking Aesop Rock.
Yeah.
Rather than this song. But this song is like, whenever I think of Aesop Rock and his style, I think of this song. Because it's right out of the bat, it's just him a cappella.
Yeah.
Do you do a thing in this podcast where you kind of like pause it and let the listener?
Around as ill, diabolical, prodigal son, Bill Grimace. If you had one more eye, you'd be a cyclops, which explains missing the premise. Blizzard mimic, baptized, chastised, laugh, die, kiss the finish, piss the villagers the fuck off. You need a pipe of picked peppers and run rock rhyme. Ace rock might have smoked one too many dimes in its time. And where you gonna be when the sun falls? Brother, probably gathered in your jeep with all these other motherfuckers. Struck twice in the same place by Moody Zeus. Ladder, smack the third clear at the park, going gone. Infinity and beyond. I'm like a Chewbacca, lookalikes and magic makers. Hermit crabs in New York City, super alligators. Keep your honolly, dream out your homily. I deal with tangible goods and avoid manufacturing food for landfills. I see friends bow to needles. I see needles bow to records. I see vows break. I see God bow and make the clouds shake. I seen the proud break. I seen a lot for a blind soldier who tattooed a cityscape while skin to blend in. Rats travel by night and bite the water bugs. I'm here to pull a three prong when it's prime. Direct the wormhole of self-sacrifice.
This is what I like about Aesop Rock. I've listened to Swimming Pools heaps.
Yeah.
And so I know all the lyrics. I've listened to this song more, and I know maybe the first two lines.
I was going to read this out to you.
No, hang on. No, I think I know the first couple lines.
Yeah.
It's Jibby Jabberjaw, Vitamin Pages and Idle Rages. No, Bible Pages versus Tidal Waves Begun. Water One. I wrote the book that shook America to splinters in a winter wasteland, icicle-bound, barren... wastelands, call Baron Munchausen and something. And then it's Peter Piper, Pick Peppers and Run Rock Rhymes.
Yeah.
Ace Rock smoked one too many dimes in his time. That's the only lyrics I know.
Yeah.
What are you going to read?
This is what it says.
Yep.
His use of words are so detailed it becomes difficult to determine their originally intended meaning. That's a criticism of Aesop Rock, which I think is a pretty rubbish thing to say, but... that is just dense, just a massive wall of words.
This song in particular, yeah. This song is a fucking... Because I think what it boils down to is it's just a swag rap. It's just like, I'm the best. It's so fast and it's so nonsensical. Like people say, you're just making, you're just putting words together that rhyme. You're just a rhyming dictionary, which I think is cool within itself. That's why I like about this song.
Yeah.
But a lot of his other songs are just very good, just really well done, good poetry. Because I think he came from slam poetry, or at least the crew he ran with in San Francisco did.
Yeah.
One of his songs, which I was considering picking, Zero Dark 30, which is all about him still doing underground rap when he's like 44 and been doing rap for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he calls it a temper tantrum about how all these old really stupid... he calls it roving thugs, roving packs of elusive thugs with, I don't know, I can't know. But there's stuff like he talks about vomiting before a show is evoking lunch over plunging necklines. Just like that sort of stuff is what I really, really like about him. He's so fast. And he's very different to Kendrick Lamar, but there's no, like, he's just using rap as a tool for a different thing. And that's what I think rap should be used for. Tools to tell different stories, evoke different emotions, rather than a genre.
Yeah.
Of music. And have you guys seen the rapper vocabulary charts? So there was this statistics student from out of...
Was that last year or the year before that came out? Like looking at word frequency and across rap music?
So they took the first 55,000 words of the artist's catalogue and then pretty much mapped how many different words they used. And... Aesop Rock won. Like it came out, and all these people went, "Why isn't Aesop Rock on here? He beat all these clowns by a mile, and he did like 2,000. He beat the highest vocabulary rapper, which was the Jizza from Wu-Tang Clan, by 2,000 words.
Yeah,
at like 7,900.
Yeah, words. Number of unique words used within artists' first 35,000 lyrics. Just like looking across this number one Aesop Rock.
Yeah.
And then he redid it, thinking like, maybe I'll get a bit of an even keel.
Yeah.
Using all these modern rappers who do kind of the same thing. Not even close.
Yeah, when I first published this analysis, I excluded Aesop Rock, figuring he was too obscure. The Reddit hip-hop community, there you go. Reddit. In uproar, claiming Aesop would absolutely be number one. Sure enough, Aesop Rock is well above every artist in my data set, and I was obliged to add him to the chart. In fact, his data point is so far to the right that he should be off the chart. I'm lazy and I didn't adjust the scale. that's cool. When I was listening to this afternoon, I listened to this in the way that I listen to every single new Eminem release.
Yeah.
Listen to it.
Very
lyrics on the other screen. Sitting there nodding, going, "Oh, that was really clever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's interesting imagery." And then never end up listening to any ever again. I'm not saying that that's going to happen with this, but I'm going to listen to more A$AP Rock after this.
Yeah. His latest, because his first album, Labor Days, very raw, very just like simple beats, lots of fast rapping. His second one, None Shall Pass, I might have one more time, I don't know, is a bit the same, a bit more hook-driven, a bit more experimental beats, because he gets very, he started working with a lot of different producers in the Bay Area and West Coast. And then his latest album, Skeleton, has just, like, half of it's the awesome drum beats that are around it. Really, really cool. But still keeping that same sort of flow. Just a different kind of attitude about things in each album. Like, None Shall Pass is very critical of the government, very socially conscious. And Skeleton seems to be a bit nostalgic. And because he's like 45 or something when he wrote it, so it seems to be very nostalgic, but also talking about the current hip hop arena, that sort of thing. You should just listen to Skeleton if you're going to listen to more. But there's also one, he does this one thing called No Regrets, which is very straightforward, and it's just about this little girl called Lucy who goes out on the street every day and does chalk drawings of everyone she sees around her, and she does that until she's 35, and then she just works in an office and goes home and draws everyone she sees in the office and charcoal, and then she gets to 88 and has all these drawings, and then Someone's like, "Are you sad you never saw?" He's like, "No, I did all my thing. Now I'm ready to die." So it's a very cool song. But yeah, just like I said, just nothing in particular about this song. Just Aesop Rock in general.
Yeah. So I mean, you said before about like how this and Kendrick Lamar, they use rap or hip hop for different purposes.
Yeah. And that's why I brought up the vocabulary thing. So just because he has the most words, but like there's no way it means he's the best rapper. Like there are people at the lower end of that spectrum, like Snoop Dogg and DMX even.
Mm.
DMX I think was the lowest, and they're great. They're really good. DMX maybe not for all. He's more profane than profound.
Yes.
But and he barks like a dog in some of his songs, and Snoop Dogg in the same way. Like, but he's great because he has this air of just not giving a shit about anything, not in the way like there's the bravado of rappers. It comes from his kind of swagger.
He doesn't give a shit about the bravado of rappers.
Yeah, he does. It's like sometimes it sounds like he doesn't even give a shit about the song he's singing because he'll just start rapping out of time.
Yeah.
And then he'll just slowly somehow get it back naturally.
Yeah.
His Snoop Doggy Dog is actually a very, very talented artist.
So Kanye.
Kanye? What about him?
I'm just wondering, you like Kanye?
I do.
He's a genius.
I think My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah, he's one of those people.
I keep trying.
I like him. I like him a lot, but it's hard.
It's tough.
It's kind of like I was going to say it's like listening to Michael Jackson, but it's not that bad.
It's not. See, I've been happy to keep trying to listen until what happened at the Grammys.
Really? Because
he did the thing, and that was a great laugh. If that had been a joke, that would have been amazing.
Are you still angry at this? Move on.
Yep, I am still angry because
your children are asleep. Sorry.
That's right. I knew that was happening.
Because I like Beck's music a lot, and I don't like Beck.
Yeah.
Right. So because Beck's weird,
it's about Kanye. You can separate Beck from the music. You cannot separate Kanye from the music.
Maybe that's the problem.
Because he is so self-aware of how people.
I don't think Kanye has much of a sense of humor.
No, maybe not. I'm too influenced by South Park.
That's also why I love Kanye, because he's so in tune to how people view him, and he's willing to, in My Beautiful Dark Whatever Fantasy, he's just like, fuck man, it's really bad, and it's I've really got to change my life, and this was after Taylor, like, because what happened is that Taylor Swift thing happened.
Yeah.
Everyone started hating him. Yeah. And then that album dropped and everyone was like, oh, that's right. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Not a great rapper, but he can make a really good song. Really good producer, really good songwriter.
Yeah.
And Yeezus, his latest, is less that and more kind of embracing this very... Like, he's very... I think he's very aware of what he's doing in most of his interviews and stuff, that he's being very... controversial and but not in a way that he's like saying controversial things, he's like stir that up, but and this happens in Yeezus, he's very good at picking these moments to just shock you, and not for the sake of shocking you, but kind of making you think about
I think I'm just like old enough such that like
I don't find it interesting.
Yeah, you can't be bothered.
Like when I was younger
.
And there were people doing that, even if I didn't like their stuff, I'd be like, that's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah,
messing
yeah.
with the media and they're messing with the people and I
messing
I
with their own image.
That's right. And I don't know, because I don't particularly like his music in the first place.
Yeah.
Then it's harder to make that link. But no, that's why I asked, because you're clearly much more interested in that. The American side of hip hop than I am.
Yeah.
Because I'm much more interested in the British and Australian stuff. So.
Australia, I think Australian hip hop's mostly a joke.
Mostly a joke.
I think there are a lot of jokes in it, but I don't
listen to much long term. The stuff that comes up and I really like it for a bit, and that's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Because it's just another type of pop music. I don't think there's like I've listened to a couple, but there's not a lot of serious Australian rappers. Obviously, they take it very seriously, but they're not doing really anything interesting. They're making pop songs with rap in
them. I mean, they're sure. I'm sure there are, but they're certainly not getting any attention.
Yeah, they're definitely very underground. But all the Canberra rappers I've seen are that. Just nobody knows their name.
Yeah,
that's all it is. Like it's just, well, I mean, they're making pop songs, but nobody's like, oh, have a drink, mate. Have a drink. Have a drink. They put on that kind of obviously American influenced thing, but you just like, mate, just fucking try and just rap about something that exists, not this fucking little.
They're either doing that, or they're going, well, I just sing like Hilltop Hoods, be a mate. It's a mate,
and my life's so hard, and I'm trying to get through it.
Well, that was good. Get your little book out.
Tilt Up Woods. Yeah. All right, what's the last one?
All right, the last one you put down just so you can talk about Neon Genesis. A Cruel Angels thesis, Yuko Takahashi.
I didn't even know who made this song. Yeah. I had to Google it before I sent it.
Just so you
can. Because I don't give a shit about Neon Genesis. I only love it because I associate it with Neon Genesis Evangelion. Like, I hear it and I'm like, oh, it's time for the show I love. I just finished it and I just can't. I can't even. I don't know. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, I love it so much.
And I was watching it weekly when I was on SBS. I think, screen, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And are we? Do you care about spoilers on this show? Oh, of course, I care about spoilers.
About Neon Genesis.
Yes. So what happens in the last episode?
Who knows?
But okay, so let's.
Is
there a form of whole world transcendentalism going on there?
Yeah, totally. Whole world. Well, and there's a lot of ties into old mate Carl Jung again the identity of self and and there's that penguin. What's up with that penguin?
I loved it. I had no idea. I enjoyed talking about it with people at the time. Yeah. I would never watch it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing where the journey was the most interesting part, and I don't know that I could rewatch some of it. Yeah, you know, and once again, I'm happy with the journey that's left in here. I've got no interest in seeing the movie or whatever. Yeah. I'm quite happy for what the hell happened.
Is that why you've only read Infinite Jest once?
Let's not make jokes about that. That's not something we make jokes about.
The podcast was terminated early.
But also this song's going to be in the show. I haven't even listened to this song.
That's all right.
It's like, what? And Matt said, that's because of wanted to talk about Neon Genesis. Like, okay. Yeah. It's like, instantly, I was like, but it's a cool theme song.
Anno something or other, the guy who made it, wanted to go with this old Polish war dance song from, like, some lost manuscript to some Polish composer. And the studio heads just went, why don't we just make it another J-pop song?
Yeah, we need another J-pop song.
J-pop song, come on.
With some crazy stuff in
like, there. He was an insane person. Like, he started making the show and then he just went insane.
Yeah, yeah.
He became mentally ill and suffered from depression. Is probably a better description of that.
But yeah.
But also just, like, it just, second half of it just becomes insane.
Yeah.
But I'm more saying this just so people who listen go watch this fucking show.
Yeah.
But then the first half is just a really cool action serial.
It's kind of really dark. No, it is. It's.
You know, I watched. Like I said, it was on SBS, and I watched it for a bit, and then I watched it later and went, is this the same?
Yeah.
Is this the same show? Shift in tone. Yes.
But it's not.
It's a shift in design. Yeah.
It's not really all at once.
No.
Either.
No.
It seems like the kind of thing that would be, but they do ease into it.
Absolutely. It's a very gradual.
Yeah. So it felt very natural.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't like.
But then, like, if you watch the last episode and go back to watch the first episode, you're like, oh, how the fuck did this happen?
You've got to go from there to there.
That's right. And there's a lot of a lot of really cool narrative shift stuff that's what you can do in a series.
Yeah.
Now, when you're talking about the podcast TV shows, you're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
Because of how difficult it's to compress that. That's right. You'd want to really drill in, like if you were to spend a whole podcast talking about this, you'd want to drill into how that narrative shift works. And that's what you can do with television.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Long form storytelling of any type. That's
explain like whole character arc.
Yeah. That's why I find it. I watch a lot of television, and I try to get my friends to watch the same television. But they're like, look, mate, I gotta watch Game of Thrones on Monday, and then we're trying to get through Breaking Bad. It's tough as it is. No, but this, The Sopranos, like it's this deconstruction of male identity, but it's also a really good mob show because there's this thing in the second season, blah blah blah, and then the fourth season. It's like, just please slow down. No, I don't care. Yeah. Please stop. Please stop. Yeah, I don't like. You'd have to have five podcasts about one television.
Sorry, man, I haven't finished Breaking Bad yet, but I'm getting there.
It's
all right.
You don't have to apologize.
Yeah, no apology accepted. How dare you?
I watched. It's a cultural
phenomenon.
I watched the last episode of season four last night just because I was listening to a podcast where they brought it up, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Got to watch it. I went listening to this old podcast with Bryan Cranston, and I was like, I think I'm about
four episodes away from
it. Is it weird that, like, because I watched it I watched maybe the first two seasons in a block and then I watched everything else as it came out.
I don't,
people look, oh, the most amazing integral scene of this entire series is this. And I'm like, oh, I know that happened. I just don't remember it.
Yeah. You're much more, I think, when you have that, like, bulk.
Yeah. And I think it's because I watched it every week, and that's Breaking Bad is something I'm not going to watch again, because like you said, it's more about watching every week. It was like, oh my god, how's Walter going to get out of this one? Like,
well, that show in particular,
it was just a dark juice of hazard,
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Instead of moonshine, it was meth.
You're giving away the ending where he gets in the General Lee and drives away.
Now I know.
And he jumps over the drum and himself.
That's right.
Now I know.
That raises in midair.
Now I know that the General Lee doesn't come out in the last episode, so that's just another option that you just. That's why we never talk about things.
We've limited his universe by one. It should have happened like that. Maybe if you hadn't watched it. I mean, come on, man. What's the moratorium on spoilers here?
But the car did come in, right? That other car.
The moratorium on spoilers is the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's the problem with me. That's why I went
to. Oh, I know people like that. I hate them. Yeah. I really.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of my flaws.
So
all
just.
Right?
You can edit this out. I don't care. But. I called
when Walter and Skylar get in the car at the end, and it flies off in the air,
and then there's this singing, and she's dressed in black leather. And greases the worst out of
playing. I was going to say there was an homage to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah,
that would have been gold had I not heard it here first.
So Riley, tell me about your performance next week.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's going to be a great one. I want to say a big thanks to all my sponsors.
Comedy Festival.
It's 18th, 19th.
Of March. 2015.
$17. You can buy tickets at canberracomedyfestival.com. Look for our show. It's hidden in the recesses of that website somewhere.
Yeah. Well-designed website.
You can also buy at the door. Maybe that'll... I don't... Oh,
which door is it again?
ANU Drama Lab. So it's not The Gods, which has a nice theater. It's not Teatro Vivaldi. Look, I dribbled.
Come
which
and sit in the bleachers and chew
tobacco. It's the fucking, like... It's... If like a collection of theatres has a nosebleed theatre, that's what we're in.
Yeah, there's a bloke selling hot dogs.
Is there transcendentalism in the show?
Oh, hang on. There might be.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes, there is.
Transcendentalism.
Which also I found out, like, alternative comedy in America is just, like, a bit more esoteric. They talk about kind of weirder things, a lot of more pop culture references. It's not just like, men and women are different.
Yeah.
Whereas alternative comedy in Australia is whipping out dicks and fucking farting into a bag, like all sorts of crazy shit.
Tell me when those ones are so I can go to them.
I have seen a guy whip out his dick.
We go to alternative comedy
every day.